Spring has sprung, and for many of us, that means spring cleaning. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, we go beyond spring cleaning, decluttering, and living lighter. Cindy Whitmer is a life coach and an author here in Lawrence. Welcome, Cindy.
Well, thank you for having me, Kay. It's my honor to be here.
Cindy, I can barely find time to do regular spring cleaning, but you're telling me we need to do more than that. What exactly do you mean by living a lighter life? Why do I need to declutter anyway?
You know, most of us, if we don't, once in a while, things get overwhelming, and that can be in lots of different areas of our life. It can be physical clutter that just takes over our homes or our offices, our garages, our cars. I mean, you name it, any physical space we have. If we don't clean it out once in a while, it can begin to take over. And, you know, emotionally, we can get cluttered up too. And we'll address that, you know, as we go along here. But a lot of us have too much on our minds, things we hang on too long, and then it causes us trouble in our relationships and in our lives. So lots of good excuses to declutter, really.
You know, it's funny that you started out talking about decluttering your car, because just this morning I gave my husband a ride into work. We don't normally drive in together, but the very first thing we had to do was clear out the front seat of my car, which was full of newspapers, shoes, all kinds of other things.
Oh, yes.
And he said, or no, I said, "This is why I shouldn't drive you into work." And he said, "It's funny that you had that reaction rather than like, this is why I should clean out my car more often."
I love that. That's a great story. And so honest. And so, you know, your listeners are relating to you right now, I know, because we all have places that end up being our dumping grounds. And sometimes it's our car. We're moving around so fast in our culture that, you know, our car is kind of an extension of our home in a lot of ways. So
my car, my purse, my desk here at work, my kitchen counter, there are so many areas of my life that I probably need to just take a little time and declutter. How did you become interested in this idea that we need to declutter not just our physical spaces, but our whole lives?
Well, I think at the time that I wrote the book about it, actually, back in 2004, I was myself feeling overwhelmed. My children were young, and I didn't have as much wiggle room to sort through my life and filter through my life as much. And being a relatively new mother, I had new concerns and new insecurities and just more demands on myself. And so I found myself kind of getting overwhelmed or consumed with stuff, physical stuff, and my mind too, you know, mental stuff, emotional stuff. And just I recognized that my stress levels were rising, and I knew that I needed to do something. And I've been a counselor for many, many years, my whole professional life, and I heard this over and over and over in my office too, you know, people coming in and just overwhelmed in one way or another, and you know, it's time to clean out the closets, the literal closets, and then the closets of our lives, you know, the relationships and our minds and all those things. So it was a personal journey as well as professional. So,
well, let's talk about some of the different ways that we can unclutter our lives physically, our physical surroundings, our bodies themselves. In what way do we need to declutter that portion of our lives?
Well, in terms of, just think of any space, physical space that is yours. Now, this may be your desk at work. This could be your car. This could be your home, your purse, you know, any, your pockets. Men, a lot of men have carry things in their pockets regularly. This could be the 3,000 emails on your computer. There's all kinds of areas of our lives where we just keep stacking and tossing and piling and putting, and we often have a junk drawer in our kitchen, or people have attics, closets, garages, storage spaces. 25% of Americans actually own storage space outside of their home ownership property.
25%?
25%. And another 25% can't get their cars in their garages because there's stuff in the garages in the place where the vehicles are supposed to go.
I have many of those neighbors.
So, you know, it's, you know, so I say to people, you know, start one of two places with the physical decluttering. Either start what's easiest, so you'll feel good quickly, like you'll see results quickly, or the area that just feels worse to you, like what's consuming you the most, and you feel like you just, you know, like every time you pass that room, you feel crazy. So get in there and go after it, because whatever's going to free you up emotionally and mentally and reduce your stress would be the place to start. But don't think you have to do everything at once. You know, just start in one corner or one drawer or one space, and ask yourself, do I want this, need this, or use this? And if you don't want it, you don't need it, you don't use it, it's got to go. There's no reason to keep it at all.
So this is maybe an extension of that rule that they talk about when you're cleaning out your closets, your wardrobe, that if you haven't worn it for, what is it, a year or 2 years, that you should get rid of it.
Yeah, unless it's like if men have a tuxedo, you know, they do bring out once every 2 years to go to the ball or whatever, you know, to a charitable event or something. But yes, your regular clothes, if you haven't worn them in a year, if you have 10 different sizes of clothing in your closet, which many women do especially, because their weight is changing as they go along. Yeah, keep the sizes that are two or three sizes that you're most likely to be in and get rid of the rest. There are people out there desperate for clothing, for one thing. So, you know, we can repurpose many, many things in our homes and so forth, which is giving also, which is a whole nother principle of decluttering that's beautiful.
So you're saying that skinny pair of jeans that fit 10 years ago that someday I hope to be able to fit in again, just let it go?
I am saying that. I've been there. I've done that. I've held on and then I've let go. And yeah, it feels really good to let go of what you're not using. It's amazing the results that you'll feel. Not just you'll be pleased with how things look when you've dialed things down, you know, tapered them down to what you're actually using and wanting. So it'll be visually pleasing when you're done, but you'll also feel like this weight, like invisible bricks almost are lifted up off your shoulders. It's magical, actually.
What about that fear that I get rid of the clutter in my home, in my closet, and then the next week I say, oh, that sweater, shoot, I got rid of it.
Well, a lot of reasons people do clutter, and in the extreme cases, you know, we have hoarders, which there's television shows about hoarders, and these are the people who have one narrow 6-inch path through their house and literally have even garbage stacked to the ceilings. So that's an extreme example, but hoarding comes from anxiety and fear and stress and a need to hold on because of fear of letting go. So it's very natural for people who are not hoarders, but let things accumulate, that there is fear around releasing. I mean, we live in America. We live in middle America. If we got rid of a sweater and then a week later we wish we had it, there's, you know, 3 million sweaters we can go out and get if we really think we got to have a sweater. And we can probably find one pretty much like the other sweater. You know, I'm not asking you to get rid of your letter jacket from high school if it holds some, you know, sentimental value and you can't replace it. Although we can talk about that. That's called memory clutter, which is a whole other form of clutter that most of us have quite a lot of. So, you know, your parents have deceased and you've cleaned out their home and you keep, you know, a lot of their things because you think, oh, that's the rocking chair my mom rocked me in when I was a baby. And there's dad's uniform that he wore when he worked. And there's their 14 photo albums and their high school diplomas. And, you know, I mean, the list goes on. And a lot of them have what we feel is sentimental value. But pretty soon, if you have your stuff, your kids' stuff, whether they're gone or still growing up, your parents' stuff, you know, and then you have your own memory clutter, which is your high school awards, the trophies, the crowns from being the queen, the grade cards from your entire life, your art projects from eighth grade, it's like, wow. And do we ever look at those things? Ever? like not often, right?
But what do you do with that stuff? I mean, as you're saying that, I'm thinking in my closet right now, I have my grandfather's letter sweater from the University of Iowa where he played football in the 1920s. Yeah. I have no idea what to do with it. I've never worn it. It smells so strongly of mothballs that even if I did want to wear it, nobody would want me to wear it. But what do you do with that kind of thing? There was just a great article I saw on the internet just the other day about no one wants your parents' stuff. That there's all of this stuff that's accumulating in our lives, like your mom's china and your grandfather's letter sweater, and nobody wants it. So, so what do we do with it?
Well, you know, we can keep some things if we really feel attached to items that really hold deep sentimental value for us. It's okay to keep things. There's nothing wrong with that. But if your physical space is consumed, if you're stressed out about it, if it's overwhelming you or causing mold or, you know, like serious problems, then it's important to get rid of things. If you don't think anybody can use something, think very carefully about that. Google and make sure no one can use it. What about a theater department and a community theater? They might could use a letter jacket from high school from ages ago. Maybe they could. Maybe that jacket would be better than no coat for someone living on the street. I mean, you just never know. But there is always, you know, repurposing the materials, or there is a thing called a trash can, Kay. Trash cans, bonfires. You know, roast marshmallows over grandpa's jacket. I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful. I'm just, you know, I mean, it's really okay to get rid of things like that. It's really okay. If you're ready to let them go.
I inherited a rocking chair that belonged to my grandmother that she had rocked all three of her children, my dad and his two sisters, in when they were babies. Now, I will tell you, it's an old cane rocker. It is not comfortable. It's quite small. You know, I'd like to say people are smaller than. I don't know that that's necessarily probably, the case, but it's not particularly comfortable. I got rid of that chair, but I felt really funny about doing so, that, you know, here was this chair that had, you know, nursed a generation, and I was just taking it off to Goodwill for some stranger to to purchase it.
Yeah, so we want to, you know, check our beliefs about something. If we're super uncomfortable, or if guilt's coming up when you're releasing something, getting rid of something, ask yourself what you believe about that. So you might have thought to yourself with the chair, how could I get rid of this when, you know, half my family tree was rocked on it. Or is it disrespectful of my grandmother that I'm letting this go? And really challenge those beliefs in your head, because likely they're either not true at all, or it doesn't matter anymore. It's great that that was your family rocking chair, but if you and no one in the family wants it and has, you know, a strong attachment to it, why isn't it okay that somebody else is going to rock their babies in it now? Or it be a cool chair in somebody's room that they flop over the quilt their grandma made, or, you know, whatever its next purpose or life can be. And so if you check your beliefs and reframe them a little bit, you might be able to let things go without guilt.
Okay. Let's talk about our physical selves and in what way we can declutter some of the ideas that we have about our bodies and let some of that go.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is a huge issue, because most of us, especially women, but I think guys too, pick on ourselves about our bodies, right? There's extra weight, or there's scarring, or there's acne, or there's, you know, the aging, other aging signs, the extra chin, the, you know, whatever. Maybe you have a tooth that's been aching for a few months and you're tolerating that. That's another kind of clutter. Anything that's kind of lingering and not taken care of that is causing us stress is something that could be released and taken care of. So if you haven't gotten the tooth fixed that's been gnawing at you and telling you for weeks and weeks that it needs to be attended to, a form of decluttering is get yourself to the dentist and get it fixed. if you have an illness or pain that you can't identify, and every time you feel it, you're thinking, what is wrong with me? That's another issue that can be addressed and be a form of cleaning. You know, cleaning the things in your life that are not as they should be.
Cindy, in your book, Living Lighter in Every Way, you have an exercise for readers to do to really get them thinking about their physical bodies and mm-hmm. in what way we can sort of declutter some of the anxiety that we might have mm-hmm. about ourselves. Can you walk us through that with us?
Yeah, I really recommend, because we're so judgmental of ourselves about our bodies and often focusing on what we don't think is perfect, that I recommend people look and consider what 10 things they really love and appreciate about their bodies.
10?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
10. Well, is it? I mean, let's think about that for a minute. I mean, most of us, not everybody on earth, but most of us have eyes that see, ears that hear, a mouth that speaks, a nose that smells, hands that can touch, feet that can walk. I mean, you know, and right, we're halfway there. You know, but how often do you stop and appreciate the fact that you can do all those things, that your body can get you from point A to point B, and that kind of thing? And what about our brain? I mean, our heart that keeps pumping. We don't have to say, okay, heart, keep pumping, heart. You know, we don't have to do that. They are just working 24/7 on our behalf all the time. But we don't think about it because it's just automatic. So if we stop and we really think, wow, this body of mine is a miracle, it's the most perfect machine on earth, then we don't have to be so, you know, critical of the little muffin top that many women are carrying that they can grab and they think that's, you know, tragic. Or maybe, you know, age spots, blemishes, scars when you learn how to ride a bike, you know, 50 years ago, whatever. You know, whatever it is. Or men who don't have the chest that they want, the abs that they want, or you know, just anything that people criticize themselves for. So I like to focus on the positive first and think about that and get strength from that foundation and move to the rest through that approach.
I love, in this exercise, you do ask your readers to come up with 10 things that they like about their bodies. And like mm-hmm. I said, 10 to me seemed like a bit of a stretch, but mm-hmm. that it really makes you think about what works, what you've got going mm-hmm. for you. And then mm-hmm. you limit us to only 5 things that
right.
we're not so comfortable with about our bodies. Right. Because I got to say, I might be able to come up with 10 things I like, but I could easily come up with 20 things that I don't like.
Wow. And how do you feel about yourself when you do that?
Pretty terrible, yeah, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot about decluttering in any area of our life is about really honing in on what's most important, right? And so that's why I ask you to only find 5 things, perhaps, about your body that you struggle with or feel concerned about or dissatisfied with, because I really, part of being able to declutter and simplify our lives is to really prioritize what really actually is important. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that then when you've got your list of 5 things that, mm-hmm. okay, I'm not so happy with this, this, and this?
Right. Well, again, I would go, okay, can I change this? Most things we can. There are ways in the world to change almost anything. I mean, heck, we can change our eye color with contact lenses. We can, you know, we can have surgery to change our shapes, literally. You know, there's lots of ways to change things, but people may not want to invest whatever it might take. So you ask yourself, what's of those 5, can I change these things? What would it take to change these things? What's most important to me to change? If I could only pick one, what would be most important? Or what is the easiest for me to begin changing? Maybe my blood pressure is not where I want it to be. What can I do today that starts to turn that in the direction that I want to go with that? You know, maybe I can go for a 30-minute walk. Maybe I can eat fewer high-calorie foods today, or whatever the doctor's instructed, or maybe set up the appointment with the doctor or the nutritionist to figure that out, whatever. But I would look at it like that to start to sort through even those five and go, what's most important to me that I begin here? Also with the body, you want to say what's life-threatening versus not. You know, if there's anything like that on your list, then yes, definitely start there, obviously. So
the high blood pressure is probably more important to address than, say, the liver spots on your hands.
Yeah, exactly. So prioritizing, again, very important whenever we're decluttering anything. What's really needing attention now?
One of the really interesting things that you address in your book, Living Lighter in Every Way, is the need for some of us to declutter socially.
Right. Okay. So I want you to start mentally in your mind, kind of going through the people in your life that you are with the most often, or who feel like they're the most important people in your life. And most people probably are thinking who they live with, you know, who their closest family members are, maybe their closest coworkers, closest friends, maybe their neighbors, people they go to church with perhaps, or are in other clubs or organizations with. And think about those relationships and what ones, if you had to put a positive mark by the person's name on a piece of paper or a negative mark, like which mark would you put by every person's name? So I know you're married, Kay, and I'm hoping that by your husband's name, you would put a plus, right? Because it's a positive relationship in your life. You feel supported. You're a team. He's comforting to you. You have a whole history together, right? That's very positive. However, we all maybe have that family member or two or 10, depending on the person, who every time you're around them, you feel either degraded or a little depressed. Maybe they're the judgmental family member that always has something rotten to say about everybody, or who never filters their mouth at all and talks about people poorly all the time, or maybe you have a negative Nelly in your life. Anytime we're around these less than positive people or relationships, we call those toxic relationships. The toxicity of the relationship can be, maybe it's just annoying to be around negative Nelly, you know, at the Thanksgiving table. Or it could be, you know, my mother never stops judging me about any decision I make ever. And I'm 60 years old and she's still, you know, treating me like I'm 10 and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Decluttering socially, this would be your friendship circles and everything too. Asking yourself, who do I spend the most time with and what effect does that actually have on me? Are these relationships weighing me down or lifting me up? There's research that says, and I'm sorry, I can't quote the exact research, that says we become like the five people we spend the most time with. So depending on what kind of person you want to be, you want to gravitate toward people who are like who you would like to be, who you are or who you see yourself being. Because if you hang around others, you are more likely to take on their characteristics. We have high influence on each other unless we're really careful.
That's a really powerful.
It's very powerful.
A very powerful thought that not only that you're having an influence on the people that you're around, as well as them having an influence on you.
Yeah, there's you know, everything is energy, and so there's a lot of energy around human beings. And it comes everything from our nonverbals to our verbal communication, to how we perceive the world, to how we show up in a room. It affects people. So you want to be choosy about where you spend your time.
What if those relationships, those people, are people that you really have to spend time with, whether it be a family member or a neighbor or someone who was important in your life, but you're realizing is maybe not a great influence on your mental well-being?
There's several things you can do, and most people are in this situation. I mean, most people can relate to that, of course, because we're not going to ditch everybody in our lives. We love our people too, and reality says I still need to go to work, even if I don't happen to like that coworker in the next, you know, cubicle or whatever, and I'm going to go to the family dinners, even though that aunt or uncle's going to be there that always seems to have, you know, whatever. So what do we do about that? Number one is, well, I'll tell you what I do when I'm heading to somewhere where I know there's a relationship that I find toxic or a person I find toxic, but I love and am going to spend time with. I prepare myself mentally. I say to myself, okay, you're about to go spend time with this person, and she usually shows up this way. This is, I can expect, I can count on her to be negative, judgmental, critical, you know, or whatever. And so what can I do for me to be really calm? And so one of the things I tell myself is every time she says something negative, I'm going to think the opposite in my head. I'm going to think something positive, or I'm going to tell myself that I'm going to get more peaceful with every ounce of negativity she throws into the energy. And I do that literally. And it's interesting. It's if you really mentally prepare yourself, you can trick yourself into not being affected much at all by people's behavior that you don't like. Another thing that was suggested to me at a Jack Canfield training once years ago, was suggested to our group, is that you place an invisible shield around yourself. Like maybe you put your hands in front of your face and your body before you're entering a room where you're expecting some toxicity, and pretend that it's there. And this is something you can see through, and people can see you through, but they can't, nothing can absorb into you. Like I say to people, stop being sponges.
You can't penetrate. Yeah, someone can't penetrate it.
That's right. Yes, I say to people, don't be a sponge. You know, wring yourself out, put your shield up. And it's not a brick wall either. It's not, you know, bricks and mortar that nobody can get through or see around or get to you. But it's more, it's something that their negative thoughts can just bounce off of. And you don't have to take it on. Just pretend that when somebody's saying something you don't like or using language you're not comfortable with or whatever, you just say to yourself, oh, it just bounced off my shield. I'm not taking that in. I'm not taking that in. And it's just a little psychological protection. When you're in the presence of someone you're not comfortable with.
It's an invisible superpower.
Yeah, it's a boundary you're putting up that only you know is there. But it can, as long as you believe it's there and it can serve you, it can. It will. I dare you to try it. It's cool.
I'm trying it at my next family reunion.
It's a really good place to try it. For everybody, it's a family reunion. Any large groups, you know, or difficult meetings, you know, the difficult board meetings or whatever at people's work or, you know, just there's lots of places for the shield.
Let me switch gears a little bit. One of the other areas you talk about decluttering is in our financial lives.
Oh,
how do we go about doing that?
A lot of people's solution to financial problems is to ignore them. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've worked with over the years who have literally, when a bill comes in the mail, we all know it's a bill, and they throw it in a drawer and they don't even open it. They don't even open them.
If I don't open it, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. But yet, deep down, people know when they're in trouble, when they're getting buried alive by their debts or just any kind of financial clutter. Financially can come in many forms. It can be insurmountable debt. You know, what feels like insurmountable debts. It can be in, you know, I own so much stuff. I have so many accounts in so many banks or so many institutions. I don't even know what I have. That's clutter. If you don't know where every dime you have is or who's in charge of it for you, if you're not, you need to declutter. And so it can come in all kinds of forms. But the first thing is awareness. So I would sit down and write down every account, every expense, every form of income, and just get it on paper in front of you to see what the reality is. You know, how many credit cards? We have store cards. You know, everywhere you go now, you get a store card, you know, and then you end up with 20 or 30 cards. So I would lay it all out in front of you on paper. first.
It occurs to me that one of the hard things about doing that today is that we live in a world of electronic financial transactions.
Yes.
And that unlike when I was a young woman and you got your bank statement and you had your credit card statement, and that was pretty much the only finances I had to go through. Now, a lot of that is done electronically. You might have all kinds of multiple ATM, debit cards, a checking account, and you might not actually ever be looking at a statement. You might just be sort of looking, eyeballing it online and think, okay, that account looks fine.
Right. So there's a couple of things I want to say about that. Just because we've turned electronic doesn't mean the statements don't exist. They're there. And if you can't find them on your bank's website or whatever financial institution's website, you call and you ask them where it is, because everything is available. Everything, years and years of it, is available. They can help you find it, and you can look line by line by line by line. So even though we don't have a physical paper financial world as much anymore, it doesn't mean it isn't there. It's all there. But the electronic world makes it easier to ignore, which is not good for some people.
It also makes it easier to spend, right? Because every place takes a credit card. You know, I go down to McDonald's, they take a credit card. You go to the gas station, they'll take a debit card. You know, and it becomes really easy to spend money without realizing how much money you're spending.
Yes. One of the best financial activities to find out where you're at is for one solid month to keep a journal of literally every dime you spend. I mean, 50 cents for a stamp to send mom's birthday card to, or whatever postage costs now, to, you know, oh, I went to Starbucks again and had the whatever latte again on my way to work for $4.50, to the house payment was $1,500, to the car payment was $500, to the utility bill this month was, you know, $75, to, oh, I decided I just had to have that scarf, so I spent, you know, $26 on that, to I went out for pizza, everything, and literally write everything down. And then at the end of the month, add up the total. You will be shocked. Most people will be shocked. It'll be far more than they thought they spent, because many people spend unconsciously. And if you have enough money, it's fine. You know, it doesn't really matter if you're saving what you want to be saving for your future or for emergencies or whatever. It's okay. I mean, buy all the pizza you want. Go to Starbucks as many times as you want. But most people, I mean, there's a lot of people in America that are in deep, deep debt. And if they took a really close look, they could easily see where their money's going. And the beauty of it, too, is you can see where you can cut expenses when you're trying to turn the situation around. When you've got it all in front of you in writing, it's really, really easy to start seeing where corners can be cut to turn it around, so you feel better.
In your book, Living Lighter in Every Way, you also talk about living lighter spiritually.
Yes.
Cindy, what does that mean?
Well, I don't want to get into some deep, dark religious debate, because, you know, I, like all of us, I have my own perspective of things, but there's many, many perspectives out there. And so some people believe that they do have the cornerstone on all things religious and spiritual. And, you know, I respect people who are strong in their beliefs and they live them out. I think that is beautiful and can really serve us well. On the other hand, there's a lot of, you know, discussions, conflict within church congregations, for example, or between countries, all based on what we all know to be true, but we have different truths, you know. Everybody's sure they know everything. And so spiritually living lighter to me is kind of establishing your own belief system, yes. Faith system, yes. If it's organized religion-based, fine. If it's not, fine. And living out your beliefs honestly and truthfully, but at the same time, leave some wiggle room to at least accept other people who might not practice exactly what you believe or how you practice those beliefs.
You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Kay McIntyre. Today on KPR Presents, Beyond Spring Cleaning, Living a Decluttered Life. If you missed last week's KPR Presents, a conversation on race, sports, and politics in America with sports sociologist Dr. Harry Edwards, it's now archived on our website. Go to kpr.ku.edu, look under News, and then KPR Presents. In fact, most previous KPR Presents programs are archived, so you can listen to them anytime, along with recordings from the KPR Live Performance Studio. You can also pledge online. KPR's spring membership drive is right around the corner. You could get a jump start on renewing your membership or become a new member. Your financial support helps pay for locally produced programs like KPR Presents, and listener support is our largest source of funding. Think about why you listen to KPR and what that's worth to you. Then pledge online at kpr.ku.edu. Again, that's kpr.ku.edu. And thanks. Spring is in the air, and with it, spring cleaning. Today on KPR Presents, we're going beyond spring cleaning and how you can declutter the rest of your life. I'm joined by life coach Cindy Whitmer. Cindy, I've heard you say that you are the expert of your own life. What does that right. mean exactly?
Well, you know, I've been a counselor and a coach for all of my career. And so often I'm with people 1 hour a week and they view me as an expert. And I am an expert in counseling and coaching and, you know, communication and all things wrapped around those professions. However, I'm only with that person 1 hour a week, but they're with themselves and I'm with myself and you're with yourself 24/7. And we come with all of our years of memories, experiences, and perspectives. And so I really encourage people to realize that they are the expert in their own lives and that they know themselves truly. And I believe there's like an intuitive wisdom that we all hold deep in us too. And if we just quiet ourselves and really get in touch with that, we can really find answers to everything that is perplexing to us. So being the expert in your own life is challenging people to be really, really aware and truthful and honest about who they are and how they're showing up in their world and what's working and what's not and what needs to change. Whatever that might be from their perspective. So,
for most people, what's the biggest obstacle that they have to lightening their life, to decluttering their life?
I think fear is a very powerful emotion. And then beliefs that we put in our head. You know, like you mentioned earlier, you felt kind of concerned about getting rid of the jacket. And it brought up some, I don't know if you said fear, but it brought up something negative for you to think about releasing that or the rocking chair. And I asked you to check your beliefs about it because probably if we feel uncomfortable with letting go of anything, releasing anything, there's a belief behind it that triggers the emotion of fear. Like, what if this happens? And what if that happens? A lot of our culture is focusing on preparing us for everything. Like, you know, we have insurance for the car in case we have an accident. We have insurance for the house in case it burns. We have health insurance in case we need surgery. We have retirement plans in case we live to be 100. We're always looking ahead for what could possibly go wrong. So it's very natural for us to also like view, you know, anything that is uncomfortable, that represents change with fear. Like, well, if I get rid of all these clothes, what if I'm sorry that I did next week or next month or, you know, anything like that. So I really think fear is a big bear that we let in a lot. But actually, if we use fear as an acronym, F-E-A-R, it's fantasized experiences appearing real.
Wait, say that again?
Fantasized experiences appearing real.
What does that mean?
It means fear isn't real. It doesn't the things you fear, they don't exist. I mean, way back when, human beings would have maybe a tiger come running after them on a regular basis. I mean, that was life. That was real.
We had life-threatening right. episodes happen on a fairly regular basis.
Yes, yes. That's fear. That's real, right? And sure, yes, I know. Scary things happen. The other night we had a storm. And yes, you know, the electricity could have gone out. A tornado could have hit a house. So fearful things. I'm not saying things don't happen. But just feeling the emotion of fear before something's happened, it doesn't make it real. It's like watching a horror movie in the theater. You watch the movie, right? And you get scared. Right? We get nervous. We tense up. We like might gasp or cover our eyes.
Or in my case, just leave the theater because I didn't want to see a horror movie in the first place.
Right. But we become engrossed in what's going on and it's not real. It's a movie. And that's what a lot of this fear is that comes up with the decluttering in our lives. It's like, well, what if this and what if that and what if this and what if that? It's like, oh my gosh, we can what if ourselves to death. We'll never do anything. We won't budge if that's all we ever do. So we have to find the true value and the real beliefs behind what we really, really want in our environment and then create that.
What area of people's lives do you generally find that they have the hardest time letting go and decluttering?
I would say in our society, American society, financially, it's just huge. It's huge. The physical, the stuff, and the money are huge. The other thing I think that's we haven't even really addressed yet that is huge is emotional clutter. A lot of emotional clutter out there, unresolved issues and relationships, people living with shame and guilt and regret that they haven't let go of, worrying. Worry is another thing like fear that does not, 95% of what we worry about never happens. Ever. Like when I was raising small children, every time I stepped on an airplane, I thought, boy, I hope this doesn't crash because I want to raise my children. And I'm an optimist, Kay. I mean, I really am. I am. I'm Susie Sunshine. I'm seeing the glass not even half full. It's like overflowing all the time. But I would step on that plane and think, oh, please don't let anything happen to me. I never want my children to think that this trip was more important than they were, you know, if I were to die in it. Well, yes, planes crash. But one in what, a million? I don't know how many flights, but you know, we might hear about a plane crash once a year. So it can happen. It can. But worrying about it every time I stepped on a plane, how did that serve me in my life? It didn't keep me off the plane.
Now you're talking to somebody who is a world-class worrier. I worry about all kinds of things that never happened, that the odds of them happening were slim to begin with.
Yeah.
How do you begin to let go of all that worry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would turn to faith a lot. I would say, you know, kind of, I would approach life more from a place of trust than concern. All the time. Trust. I trust we're going to get there safely. I trust the pilot knows what he's doing. I trust if there's a problem, we'll fix it and land safely. I trust that there's a plan for my life that's bigger than me. Someone or something is bigger than me is in charge, and my life is being overseen, and it's all okay. Whatever it looks like is going to be okay. So most of our worries, fears are not rational. They're not rational. They're possible, but they're not rational. So I would really sort it out. I'd be just challenging enough with yourself to reason through them more and let them go.
Cindy, we've talked about sort of decluttering your life physically. What gets in the way of living a lighter life emotionally?
Well, several things do, but I really believe that one of the biggest is not letting go of past hurts, conflict, and forgiving people or ourselves for things that we've done or they've done or we've said or they've said or not done. There's just this horrible disease out there of hanging on to pain and painful memories and relationships. And it is so damaging. It's like we cannot move on if we're hanging on. And so I really encourage people to forgive even the most horrendous of things that happen. Really will feel so much better if we can forgive and move on.
Why is that such an important part of living a freer life?
Well, I think it's twofold. When we haven't forgiven, we've definitely not forgotten. So it's on our minds. It's in our hearts. We carry it around all the time. And then actually, even though we think we'll feel better with revengeful thoughts or resentful thoughts or judging someone for whatever has happened, we actually don't feel better. There is no evidence anywhere that anyone can find anywhere in any scientific, psychological, or spiritual study that says hanging on helps or feels good in any way at all. So it feels bad. Feels bad. If I'm mad at you and I just keep thinking I'm mad at you and I treat you like I'm mad at you, or even in my thoughts I'm stewing about you because I'm mad at you, I'm hurting me more. And I'm not actually directly hurting you nearly as much.
As hurting yourself.
Yeah.
So why is it that we kind of want to hold on to those wounds?
I don't know if we want to. I think maybe people would say they want to. I think it's a protection. I think we have the illusion that if we hang on to past hurts and we don't forgive someone, that they aren't capable of hurting us again. But that's an illusion, because the situation's still hurting us just because we're hanging on to it. So we're deceiving ourselves. And whenever you deceive yourself, then you're hurting yourself even more, because you're not living in truth. It's not authentic. And the other thing is that on a even deeper layer of this, we come from love. We all come from love. And so whenever we are doing anything or thinking anything that is unloving, we aren't being authentic, actually. So we're off track every time.
If you are having trouble forgiving someone or mm-hmm. forgiving yourself for something you've done in your past, what's the first step to moving beyond that, to forgiveness?
Well, I think it's very important to adopt the belief that we really are always doing the best we can at the time. We really are. Let's say you can't forgive an ex-spouse or a parent for something from when you were growing up, or you know, your college roommate, whoever it is, whatever it was, they were doing their best at the time. Even if it wasn't great, it was the best they knew how from their own experiences and awareness of themselves at the time. So if you can start to say that to yourself and about yourself, like, hey, I did the best I could at that time with the awareness I had, the understanding, the experience I had, I did my best at that time. Now, 15 years later, I have more experience. I have more awareness and more options. If I had to do it over, I'd do it differently. But at that time, I did the best I could. So starting there is very important. And then realizing, if you can ask yourself, how is this serving me to hang on to this issue? How does this serve me? And I don't know how it positively serves anyone. So if you can challenge that and go, yeah, what good am I doing by deciding I'm never going to let this go? I'm just going to hang on to it forever. You might start to talk yourself out of it a little bit. Plus, what could you be doing instead? You know, with that time and the energy and the emotional charge of not forgiving and hanging on and not letting go, if you replaced it with joy-filled activities or fun, humorous thoughts or behavior, or, you know, just even resting compared to that is a huge improvement. So that's where I would start.
Great advice, Cindy.
Oh, thanks. Well, I hope it'll be helpful to your listeners.
Cindy, I started out this hour saying it's springtime. It's a great time to do spring cleaning in your life, in every area of your life.
Yes.
What is it about this time of year that makes us want to start afresh?
Well, I think it's very cyclical. I think it's very weather-based, actually. You know, winter for us in the Midwest, we kind of, it's darker, it's colder. We kind of
hunker down, nestle in.
Right. And we tend to put on more weight over the winter, physical weight, and we stay home more. We're not as active. And so it's funny how we just hang on to more during that time. And then it's kind of freeing psychologically, physically, everything, when we can open the doors and open the windows and it's lighter longer, there's more time, there's more activity going on. And then we start to realize, what am I doing with all this extra this and that and the other? It's easier to get rid of stuff in the spring because we can haul it away easier. We can have windows open when we're in places in the house that maybe don't smell so good because we have so much stuff. And I think there's just a sense of new beginnings. You know, it starts with the new year, but then when spring comes and we see the grass turn green and we see the flowers blooming and the buds on the trees, it's like a sense of, oh, we're starting anew, we're starting fresh. And so what better way to start fresh than really identify again where we're at in our lives, what we really want, and removing everything that we don't want.
So if someone's listening to this and thinking, yes, I want to declutter my life, I want to lighten my load, I don't really know where to start, what one thing would you say, start here?
Well, I think the number one question to ask ourselves when we're looking at life and considering decluttering in any of these areas we've talked about is, what do I really want? Like with capital letters, really, R-E-A-L-L-Y. What do I really want in my life? You know, what am I striving for? Because when we know what we want, then we know what we don't want. Do you want a life of worry? No. Probably not. That's probably not on the top of anybody's list, right? But yet millions of people live in that worry space. It's very common, especially for women, especially for mothers. what do you really want? Do you want the debt you have? Do you want all the things you have? You know, the more things you have, then the more things you need to insure, the more things you need to clean, the more things you need to move around, the more things you need to find a place for, the more, it's just exhausting. So I would say the number one question to ask first is, what do I really want? And then if you identify easily many areas in your life with most Americans can, that they want to change, then again, I would ask yourself one of two things. What can I do quickly, easily, that will give me some feeling of success and like I see results fast, so I feel good, and which motivates me to do more? And or what is like critical? What needs to change, or like things are gonna really plummet for me? Like maybe it's the high blood pressure, you know, and thinking about our bodies and what needs to change. Or maybe it's, you know, we have another baby coming and no place to put this baby because we've stacked every room, you know, and we really need to make room for this new little person that's coming into the world. Or whatever's most urgent or easiest, I'd start there. And then you'll feel good. You want success quickly, which motivates you to move on to the next area where you want to tackle something.
I'm visiting with life coach Cindy Whitmer on ways you can declutter your life. Cindy, I've never met a life coach before. What exactly does a life coach do anyway?
Yeah, thank you. A life coach can be hired for all kinds of reasons. Most people hire a life coach to help with work-life balance. Coaches are also hired in professional settings to work with corporate teams, maybe to increase retention or increase productivity, increase income for a company, help teams work together better. Individuals hire coaches for anything from I want to lose weight to I want to, you know, get my finances in order to I want to improve my relationship with my teenagers to, I mean, anything, any area of your life where you're looking to move from where you are to where you'd rather be in some area of your life is a really good reason to hire a coach. And I like to bring in my counseling expertise into the coaching setting. I use a lot of counseling techniques while I'm coaching people because coaching is more focused on where we're at right now in the present and moving into the future that we want to create, whereas therapy often is something's happened in the past, so I'm not happy right now and I need to heal it, fix it, get over it, something like that. So I bring a lot of therapeutic techniques with the coaching skills to help people move forward in their lives. And so I just really love, I've lived my whole career, inspiring and guiding and supporting people as they make changes in their lives. And it's my purpose, it's my passion, and I look forward to getting to know more people. So thank you.
Cindy, thank you so much for coming into KPR this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a great honor and pleasure.
I've been visiting with life coach Cindy Whitmer of Lawrence. She's the author of Living a Lighter Life and Goodnight Africa. She's on the web at cindydwhitmer.com. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas. KPR Spring Membership Drive is just around the corner. On Tuesday, we'll kick things off with our Power Breakfast. That's when we'll try to do a whole day's worth of fundraising in just 90 minutes. During our Power Breakfast, your pledge will be matched dollar for dollar. That's thanks to a pool of KPR supporters who know how important listener support is for local public broadcasting. Locally produced programs like KPR Presents, Trail Mix, and Classics Live are only possible because people like you pay for them. KPR News and our Statehouse coverage are only possible because people like you pay for them. Programs in KPR's live performance studio, like our panel of Kansas voters coming together after the divisive 2016 elections, all of that is only possible because people like you pay for them. And now, your financial support is more important than ever. Think about why you listen to KPR and what that's worth to you. Then tune in Tuesday morning during our Power Breakfast from 6:30 to 8 a.m. when your pledge will be matched dollar for dollar. That means your pledge of $150 will be worth $300 to Kansas Public Radio. Your pledge of $500 will be worth $1,000. Whatever level is right for you, it will be worth double Tuesday morning during our Spring Membership Power Breakfast. So mark your calendar, join us Tuesday morning, and thanks.